Well, I started doing it about 5 years ago, actually. It's called the 21CN Network, 21 Century Network. They've spent about £9 billion on it, and they launched it with big, you know, razzmatazz last year, and you could get high-speed broadband in big metropolitan areas, maybe to start off only, you know, 30 or 40 different places. And I'm pleased to say that it's finally hit Lincoln. I got my connection last Monday, and whereas my old broadband connection, I was getting 5 megs, I don't know if people are familiar with those terms, I'm now getting 10 megs, so it's doubled. It's billed as a 24 meg technology, but in reality, you've got to be sensible about these. People don't get that kind of speed.
Yeah. So what, is this for any BT customer that currently has?
It uses, I mean, I don't know if people know, but the way BT's set up is as a wholesale provider. In order to break the monopoly, the government said you've got to sell to any other service provider that wants to sell the services at the same price, right? So we're a wholesale service provider, and we buy our basic broadband from BT, and we sell it on, and we differentiate ourselves with all sorts of different widgets and levels of service, right? So in theory, anyone that's a BT service provider could roll it out. In practice, not everybody has done. Probably only a dozen or so ISPs around the country, but it's certainly available now in Lincoln for those that want to get hold of it.
Okay, so an internet service provider could, or BT themselves, could say, and no doubt charge more for it, would they? Or is this a replacement for what's currently there?
Some of them, it's up to them how they want to run the business, really. You know, some will use it as a competitive advantage to say, you can get a faster network for the same price, or some of them will say, well, actually, you know, you can pay a bit more, and it's really so many different options out there, and it's down to however, you know, different people want to pitch the commercials.
Okay, but you'd be hard pushed, you probably wouldn't be able to get 10 meg down it before.
No, you wouldn't. The physical capacity, the limit was 8, and I mean, I never got 8, I only got 5, but you know, 5 was better than 2, which is what I got before, and 10 is better than 5, right?
Yeah, my dad's recently signed all up for it, and I think he's on about 2 or 2.5, I think it was the other day. Meanwhile, with Virgin, of course, they're offering this 50 megabyte connection. You pay for it, but they're offering it.
In some parts of the country, though.
And I think you can get it in parts of Lincolnshire now. Quite possibly, of Lincoln now. Because, of course, not everywhere in Lincolnshire is covered by Virgin. But also they're rolling out, because I think their minimum, because I'm on 2, I think their minimum is now 10.
So well, Virgin uses a different technology. Virgin is a cable modem technology, whereas the BT stuff is broadband ADSL.
And
the difference is, it's how you specify it. They might say 50 megs, but that 50 megs might be shared between the whole street or between several streets. So, you know, in practice, at peak times, you will not get anything like that speed. So you've got to be, it's a lot of marketing hype involved in it. But no question, if you're on at 3 o'clock in the morning and everybody else is in bed, you'll get much faster broadband.
Right? Great, just when you need it. Now, tell me about the duck, Tref. I was looking online the other day and I've come across this campaign to save... I can't even believe we're talking about it on air. But I know there's a good reason to talk about it. To save the pirate duck. There is a Facebook campaign to save the pirate duck. There's on the 10 Downing Street website, there's now a petition to Gordon Brown to save the pirate duck.
This is very serious indeed, because one of our engineers collects rubber ducks, and it was stolen by an international gang of internet criminals.
Really?
And they've posted pictures of it to show he's the guy that the duck's still okay on the internet, on wheresmyduck.com. And I wrote a blog post about this because I thought it was a bit of a light relief. But then I thought, hang on a minute, there's a little bit of a serious edge to this. I want that duck back. And so I started a Facebook group, and gradually more and more people have been signing up for it and signing up for the position. So I envisage that at some point Gordon Brown will want to get involved, because there'll be such a weight of public opinion for him to try and bring back the duck. I mean, reality is, it's a bit of an exercise to see how viral marketing works, okay? Because, you know, the word spreads on Facebook, and it's how you go about selling things. So in this case, I'm selling Tomiko and my blog and stuff. But, you know, you can see every hour almost the number of people on the Save the Pirate Duck group goes up.
So these right? are, you don't know these people?
No, no. It's open to for anyone to sign. What happens is they'll say, oh, this is a really cool group and lots of fun posts on it. And they spread the word with their friends and their friends sign up and so on. And the more then, you know, it starts the snowball then.
So you can build up. You could, doing the right marketing, the viral marketing, you could build up a product that before it even... Because if you started, for example, if you started, if you knew you were going to start selling pirate ducks, you're building up an image.
Oh, yeah, it gets a bit cool then, doesn't it? And,
yeah.
And everybody wants to buy a pirate duck.
You can build up an image before you even get to that point.
Yeah,
maybe. So more people are signing this petition.
Well, there's a specific example of how well it worked, actually, with a company called Animoto, who set themselves up to produce innovative presentations. So you could send them your collection of photos, and Animoto would run it through a photo through the computer, and the computer would decide what kind of music to set that slideshow to. And it would choose... if it was dark in the photos, they'd choose darker music and so on, and then the computer animate all the slides coming in. And they set up in business, and it was going okay, but then they put it on Facebook. And all of a sudden, within 48 hours, Animoto had to go from having 30 computers to support their network to having 4,000 computers, okay? And that was just because people latched onto it on Facebook and it got trendy and all of a sudden the business shot went like a bang, right? The biggest problem they had is they were using a service that Amazon have, which is called cloud computing, which you can start off with one computer and flex it up to as many as you like. And of course, within 48 hours, they had 4,000. And at the end of the month, they had to pay for the 4,000 computers that they were using, and they didn't have the money. They were a startup. So the two owners of Amazon had to buy shares in Animoto just so that Animoto's guys could pay Amazon for the bandwidth that they'd used.
Okay.
But that's an example of how things, Facebook and viral marketing can...
It can spread like wildfire. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We're talking about this click experiment in a little while about infected computers, but e-crime, is just massive, isn't it?
You wouldn't believe how big e-crime is. I'm continually surprised myself. I found out recently that in the States, e-crime fraud lost people $48 billion last year. We don't really know how big it is in this country. We don't properly gather the figures. But I guess it all starts with, you know, in the old days, people were worried about viruses on their PCs. And the reality was that the viruses in the 5 years ago were kids in their back bedroom trying to show how great they were and delete your files and say, hey, I'm on your PC. Nowadays, viruses are written by professional organized crime gangs, right? And they don't want you to find out there's a virus on your PC, because what they do, they'll access your PC, maybe because you've clicked on an email where you shouldn't have and it's downloaded something, and they'll sit there just quietly collecting all the information that you tap into your keyboard. This information sent back to the gang, and the gang takes eventually finds your credit card or your bank account information.
So they can see what websites you've been going, they can see what you've been typing in, the passwords and
Or they recreate the credit card and sell it. There was a website called darkmarket.com where gangs used to trade information, stolen credit card information. Right? Now, the key is that these gangs only steal maybe £50 a time from your bank account, and so it's not a big enough crime for the police to warrant getting involved. In fact, there's a central e-crime unit, the Metropolitan Police, with only got 30 staff, and they actually not interested at all in hearing about these £50 thefts. The reality is what happens is the gang steals it from thousands of people, and all you can do is report it to the bank, and the bank's got to tell the police occasionally what's going on. So occasionally we do hear about people being arrested for stealing 1,500 credit card account information and taking £50 out each. Right? So it doesn't affect an individual in a big way enough for them to make a huge fuss of it. But when you add it all up, it's a lot of money.
That's amazing. How do you know, and how can you stop getting those things on your computer? How would I know if it was on my computer?
Well, first of all, you've got to make sure that you've got your computer security, all your Microsoft updates in place. You've got to make sure you've got up-to-date virus protection. And really, that's all you can do, and that typically should catch it.
As an internet service provider, is there anything that the internet service provider can do to stop traffic getting to you as well?
There is. I mean, what we would do typically is we would scan every email that comes through. So if there's a virus or something nasty on an email, we just ditch it. We don't even bother asking if you want it or not. We ditch it. The problem comes is when you get an email saying, hey, this is a cool website to look at, it hasn't got any virus in it, you click on it. When you click on that website, then it downloads. And of course, we can't possibly scan all that kind of traffic. And that's when you're in trouble, really.
Yeah. Would most internet service providers do that?
Yeah, they would, yeah.
But in terms of scanning stuff before it gets to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want the customers to have that problem, do you?
No, you don't. And, I mean, it's interesting. It's very difficult to catch these gangs because it's all international. Primarily, it comes from China, Russia, and Brazil, right? So you can picture the scenario where someone in the UK police force is ringing a policeman in Brazil to say, hey, I've got this gang in Brazil pinching stuff from the UK. The Sao Paulo has got a very high street murder rate. They've got better things to worry about, right? There's a Ukrainian gang who used to put stuff on people's computers, and they would check to see the IP address of the computer. And if they saw that it was a Ukrainian IP address, they'd stop doing it, because they didn't want the Ukrainian police to be interested. And so that Ukrainian gang still happily chunders away stealing things off people's computers.
That's such a simple picture you paint of the police calling out this.
Well, I know, but that's...
Police in Brazil, would you mind just going down the road and getting this guy to... And they're going, well, no, we're not going to do that. We've got better things to be worrying about.
It's not as straightforward as that, because the police in Brazil would need to find out who the internet service provider was that was providing the network connections, and they would have to get a court order in Brazil, presumably, or go in with all guns blazing, I don't know. So the process is horrendously complex. And, you know, in this country, we've only got 30 police to cover the whole e-crime subject. They have got, every time someone is accused of downloading nasty stuff off the internet, and they're caught, maybe, the computer has to go into the police for a forensic examination. There is an 18-month backlog of computers to be examined. It's an uphill task, and whilst it's a subject that's becoming very foremost in the minds of politicians, what they're going to do about it, they haven't got their brain around.
So in reality, what you hear, what you see, is... There aren't the people there. There isn't the organisation there to try and tackle this e-crime, which is just growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, and especially as the world becomes more an internet-based world. You know, the internet touches your every aspect of your life. Just things like, I was watching, I don't know, it sounds a bit boring, but I was reading about the Criminal Justice Bill committee sessions. Okay, and there are little nuances, like it's illegal for someone to groom a child for child pornography reasons on the internet, right? But it's not illegal to groom a child to commit suicide. Now, how many other little nuances of life are not covered now that we're moving into the internet world? You know, yeah. It's... I guess eventually we'll probably get there, but you know, there's a strong element of needing to have international cooperation. The police force in every country needs to be involved. But when you think it's Brazil, China, and Russia, it's going to be a long haul.